security, mobile, cloud. Three mega trends that are reinventing the IT landscape, enabling a new world of work, and ultimately changing our everyday lives. Join host Caleb Barlow from IBM as we explore the latest news and insights for IT practitioners and security professionals.
This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
Want to listen to this show offline? You can find it on iTunes by searching for Caleb Barlow. While you are there, please rate the show so others can find it as well.
Hi, this is Caleb Barlow, and today we're talking about containerization and what that means in a DevOps world. And frankly, can application security keep pace with the movement to containers? So just to kind of preface this, containerization like Docker and IBM containers takes application portability to a whole new level. Applications can be packaged with everything they need to run for simplified high-velocity deployment. By using this native separation within the OS, organizations can get many of the benefits of a VM, but without the overhead of a hypervisor. So what we want to talk about today is, what's the downside? You know, most security tools weren't designed with containers in mind and don't necessarily play well. And many security teams, frankly, aren't aware of the emerging threat models associated with rapid application development and a containerized model. So to talk about this today, I've invited Diana Kelly, one of our executive security advisors, to give us a little bit of insight into what containerization is all about. How you doing, Diana?
Hey, Caleb. Doing well. How are you?
All right. So why don't we start off with the basics? What are we talking about here when we're talking about containerization?
Yeah, I think you summarized it really well. I mean, this is operating system level virtualization. So rather than what we think of as virtualization, we have a hypervisor, and then on top of each hypervisor, we have a guest OS. And then on top of that, we have our applications running. You don't need the hypervisor. You don't need the guest OS. You can still use share the resources of the underlying metal, but have separation within the application containers themselves. So it being December and a lot of people are in a holiday season mode, it's a little bit similar to if you buy something and in order to put it together, you're going to need to have a very specialized Allen wrench and you're going to need to have batteries. Well, you can either ship all of those in the same package, so the person who gets there put it together probably at the 11th hour before they need to give this gift has everything that they need within that container, so it's real fast for them to put it together and get it assembled, versus you open the package and you find out, oh, shoot, I need to go get the batteries or I need to go get that specialized wrench. And when you're running applications, it's very often similar to that, except the batteries are specific libraries or specific resources. The developer can wrap them all up into the same application package, ship them out so they know who's ever got that container will be able to run the application with all of its required dependencies.
Well, that would certainly resemble me at about 11:30 on a Christmas Eve, most Christmases, going, oh, no, how many parts are in this thing? What assembly is required? And to your point, do I have the stinking batteries, which – you know, I swear it's like, you know, some years it's everything seems to be triple A's and other years it's everything's double A's and I never have enough. So, okay, this is all about ease of deployment, speed. But when we're talking containers here, you know, containerization is a grossly overused term, especially when we get into the world of mobile. This is a completely, well, kind of a completely different animal than what we're talking about on mobile.
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about application containers like Docker or IBM containers, which are built with Docker or Rocket, that's really about packaging up all the dependencies that you need to run the application. You may even have the runtime in there. So a developer can create it. They can put it into multiple different testing environments. They can move it around within the data center very easily, and it does leverage the Linux container underneath. Now, when we're talking about mobile containers, very often what we mean is cordoning off a part of the platform itself where we can securely store things like sensitive documents and then encrypt them and, you know, be able to wipe them if the person that owned that document leaves the company and we want to get it off of their mobile device very quickly. So two different types of containers, and, you know, the use cases are very, very different.
Yeah, two very different use cases. And, of course, I guess, and we don't need to get into it now, but, of course, the big debate on mobile is really as the operating systems move more and more towards kind of a managed application model and as the operating systems realize the importance of separating personal from corporate data, you know, we're frankly starting to see containers and that whole model kind of disappear on the mobile front, whereas it's really coming to the mainstream when we talk about a DevOps environment. So,
yep.
You know, how does this play into the DevOps development lifecycle? I mean, I've got to imagine this is a big game changer in that space.
It is, and there are many, many large companies that have decided to just containerize or Dockerize the majority of their applications.
Is that now a formal verb, Dockerize?
I've heard it used in tech meetings. I don't know if it's going to be word of the year yet, but we can hope, right?
Okay.
But yeah, Dockerized environments are becoming much more common because you can easily deploy the Dockerized app or the containerized app, move them around. It's better for things like configuration changes because it minimizes the overhead. You don't have to worry about if it's going to land in a new environment and it's not going to have the right libraries, the right middleware. So it's very much, and it really feeds into the automated, very, very rapid approach that you see in DevOps. So they're kind of, although they're different, right? You can have DevOps without containerization, containerization without DevOps. They're so complementary that they're coming to the fore within organizations very quickly, which is similar to when virtualization and cloud were in heavy adoption, you know, 5-6 years ago. They were said in the same sentence. You almost began to think they were the same thing. They're not.
Yeah.
But because they complement each other so well, they're hitting our world at the same time.
Well, you know, I remember, so first of all, I mean, this is pretty awesome change. But I got to tell you, I remember back 5-6 years ago, hypervisors start to take off, and, you know, geez, two big things just kind of hit you hard, right in the gut from a security perspective. One was, oh my gosh, we don't have 10 servers we need to update with this patch or this fix or, you know, to get the security profile. Each of those 10 servers is running, you know, 500 different hypervised OSs, and they're all at different versions. How are we going to keep track of all of that? Now, this, on one hand, solves some of that problem, but correct me if I'm wrong, also causes some other problems, right?
Yeah, and that's it. You know, we, as we're solving some, we're creating, you know, one door opens and another closes. And with security and containerization, the number one problem that I've heard is a lack of awareness or understanding and this desire to believe that it's in a container, it's totally safe. And you had raised the point of on it when we talk about containers on mobile devices, we very often do mean very specifically security. So I have heard, again, you know, this thought of, well, we use Docker, so that means we don't have to test the application. Okay, slow down.
Yeah, that just sounds flawed at the very start.
Yeah, the containers are really for portability, for isolation, and for reuse, not for security. They can be part of a secure application deployment and architecture, but they're not going to do it on their own. And then you had raised one of the big points that comes up, which is with when we've got patching, we had back in the days, we had the dormant VMs, where
the
patch cycle,
right?
Yeah, sleeper cells. Yeah, exactly. You know, the patch cycle went through, but, oh, this VM was offline, so it didn't get patched. And when it comes back online, now it's in a vulnerable state. This is very much the same thing that can happen with Docker deployments. They can go to sleep and not get updated, or you can find out that you're using an older version of Java, for example. How often do you have to go and
oh, so you can literally end up with a scale container out there, even at the application level, because some component of what's in there you know, got old or had had a vol, and you know, the point is you got to go update it.
That's it. So you've got the container running with the dormant over the old version of Java. It's vulnerable until it's updated, and you've got a potential exposure within your organization now.
So
same
how
with
are we
the libraries that are packaged. Sorry.
Yeah. Well. How are we going to deal with this? Right. Is this something we need to approach with tools? Is this an awareness issue? Is this a scripting issue? Will existing tools go address this? How do we go tackle this new problem?
It's going to be a combination of all of the above. So we have some really nice tools for orchestration and management within container environments. So Kubernetes is an example of that. And that's going to help a lot with the configuration. I think some of our tools are going to have to get a little bit more container aware, the same way that we saw in the VM world, where we realized we were getting data leakage from OS to OS, you know, over the hypervisor. We didn't have the same kind of network monitoring when we weren't going off the metal out into the network, but we were going within the hypervisor environment. That this is going to be similar in the Docker world. We're going to have to get transparency and insight into communications that are container to container on the same system, even if that communication is not going out to the network. So I think we're going to get a combination both of advances in our configuration and our monitoring, as well as just being more container aware. So some specialized, some advances within our existing solutions.
Are there, so I think back to, you know, the original liftoff of the hypervisor, are there blind spots we need to be worried about?
Yeah, I mean, as I had said, I really think that when we start looking at communication between the applications, that there could be some potential issues there, especially with, you know, data leakage, with communications. Some other blind spots are just even how we're implementing what we're doing with the containers on the systems and the security controls that we're putting in with and without containerization in mind. So you think about something like SE Linux, which is the security enhanced Linux, and it's got security policies for Mac, mandatory access control. Well, when you're putting Docker on top of SE Linux, it gets a little bit more complicated. So you've got this nice secure Linux, but now you've got to think about how that security is impacting the Docker containers themselves and their ability to do what they need to do. So for example, if you've got a volume mounted, you need to make sure it's got the right access and controls. So very often they'll get mounted up as just the read only, but they also need to be writable in order to do their job some of the time. So you've got to understand how those interact and how you've configured things that we see as secure, like secure, you know, secure Linux, SE Linux, you know, making sure that we've rethought how we're going to maintain the same security in this new Dockerized environment. Another area for that is around hierarchical or striated admins, so privileged admins.
Yeah, so like, can I break up the admin between, or I mean, does this even make sense, where someone, you know, there's a difference between the admin over the whole thing versus the admin on a particular app or a particular container?
Right. If you are using very hierarchical privilege, admin within your Unix implementation, you may need to rethink to make sure that each of the Docker, the container apps are going to be able to do what they need to do, and to not overprivilege. So there's this concept of sort of a sudo container that's been suggested, the super privileged container, which mm-hmm. this container can do absolutely everything. That would make ease of deployment. You know, stuff's going to run, your app's going to have the rights it needs, but then we've kind of broken back our whole privileged access and our, the reason that we striated our hierarchical admin in the first place. So it's going to be it requires thought to deploy these properly.
I mean, it almost seems like this could be a potential benefit, right? I mean, maybe I'm overthinking this, but I would think you've got less of a need for that super user admin in this case, because if these containers work right, people can run the app that they care about, and they don't need godlike access to the server in all cases.
We can hope, but very often when it comes into, if you've ever doing development and testing your apps. If the app isn't doing what it wants to do, giving it more access is very often a way to solve the problem, or can be a way to solve the problem.
Yeah, or at least be able to troubleshoot, know what's going on, right?
Yeah, as long as we don't default out to just blanket, super privileged containers, I think we can make things better, but there is that risk too.
Well, what I also like about this concept, again, in theory, big quote, it is very analogous to the kind of mobile use case, which in theory, the only thing crossing between these containers is the specific data that you instructed to cross between containers. I mean, I guess the theory here would be that if somebody breaks into this app, there's less likelihood they're going to cross over into other data on the same system. Is that a fair assumption, or is that wishful thinking on my part?
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the big points, is that if we architect in our environments that this app and this container only communicates in a certain way with this other app and another container. And ultimately, we're getting into these sort of N plus, I don't even want to say tier anymore type applications, because you start getting into what defines an application and what's really a tier.
Yeah, where does it start and stop?
Yeah, exactly. And we have different processes within the container. Some people argue, should we have a process per container or multiple processes? But depending on what they're doing to create that bigger app together, it may be that one app has rights to data in another app. It normally wouldn't be transferring that data, but an attacker may find a creative way to extract the data across the containers. And if we're not seeing this on a network, and we're seeing in a classic three tier, we see a query into a database, most companies have some sort of data activity monitoring, and we'll see that very clearly. If that's going between containers, we're going to hit that blind spot, and we could see some exposures.
Or it becomes another opportunity to monitor, right, and put additional protections in place. So, all right, look, so what should security professionals listening to this do besides get educated? What are the things they need to do now as these new application containers start to proliferate throughout their infrastructure?
Well, I was going to say get educated first, because this is to talk about containers as an overview. It's a great way for admins to start to get an idea, but really your developers have probably already gone pretty far down the path at your company with container use. So being able to go in and talk the talk with them, and that does require some education. If you go to the Docker site, Docker has very good high-level education. The IBM Bluemix, IBM Container site also has fantastic education. Again, remember, it's built with Docker, so you can go to the IBM Bluemix just to see these different overviews, things to think about. They're really easy to watch videos. So I really would say do start with the education, even though I know it's kind of everybody says it, at least to get some of the lingo down and to get a better view on it. I think that's the number one thing.
Well,
that,
and go try building
admins
one, right? I mean,
it's
pretty easy to build one of these things.
Or to start developing yourself. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, go build a test app. Get a feel for it. All right. Well, anything else you want to mention here in closing?
I do. I had two other points about what to start doing. So the second one is to get feelers out about what your developers are doing, because, again, it's like when we were going to the cloud initially, there was a lot of, we're not using the cloud at all. Your developers very likely, somebody somewhere has got some Docker or is playing with Docker. Caleb, it sounds like you're already building apps, a containerized app. So make sure that you check in with what people are doing, do some kind of an inventory and see what people are using, why they're using them, because this is going to be really critical to the next thing, which is get support and policies in place. What you don't want to do is to have some blanket, we're scared of Docker and containerization, so don't do it. What you want is to understand what the need is within the developer community at your company, so that you can get support from the executives about what kinds of containers you're going to support, what kind of policies, what kind of configuration management, and then roll that out to the dev team so that rather than saying, no, 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 containers, you can start saying, yes, containers, but here's how the company would like you to use them and deploy them.
Well, my takeaway from your dialogue is that it's pretty evident to me that they probably solve a lot more problems than they cause, and it's just a matter of thinking through things in a new way.
That's it. Just, you know, get educated, get ahead of the curve. You might want to start talking to your compliance and audit teams, too, so that they're not caught out and start seeing that, you know, containers are bad. But it's really about education and planning, because these are – containers are good. So let's get them into our organizations securely.
Well, let's leave it with that. Containers are good. Well, thank you, Diana Kelly. And that's the story on containerization in the DevOps world. So everybody get out there, build a container. And if you haven't built one, go check them out on Bluemix. Thanks.
Thanks.
This content was provided for informational purposes only. The opinions and insights discussed are those of the presenter and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the IBM Corporation. Nothing contained in these materials or the products discussed is intended to, nor shall have the effect of, creating any warranties or representations from IBM or its suppliers, or altering the terms and conditions of any agreement you have with IBM. The information presented is not intended to imply that any actions taken by you will result in any specific result or benefit, and it should not be relied on in making a purchasing decision. IBM does not warrant that any systems, products, or services are immune from, or will make your enterprise immune from, the malicious or illegal contact of any party. All product plans, directions, and intent are subject to change or withdrawal without notice. References to IBM products, programs, or services do not imply that they will be available in all countries in which IBM operates. IBM, the IBM logo, and other IBM products and services are trademarks of the International Business Machines Corporation in the United States, other countries, or both. Other company, product, or services named may be trademarks or service marks of others.